been a while since we've last posted something because we've had a lot to deal with. Well, you more than me. I'm not going to take any credit for that, really. Today's episode is all about private autism diagnosis. And we actually have some experience to share in that and some good news as well. Over to you.
Okay. I thought you were going to share a bit more.
I just fallen out of words escape me. Over to you.
Okay. I try so hard not to like monopolize everything, but that is always where it ends up going. So,
and I'm cool with that.
Thank you. So we, as you will know, if you followed our pages, if you have followed this podcast, we have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. Both children were flagged up at 2 years old with differences. And of course, the medical model kind of refers to them as concerns.
Yeah.
And things that you're worried about. And although there are some things that you might have concerns over because it does impact their life, and then obviously as a family it can have an impact. Generally speaking, we don't really buy into a lot of this deficit model. Like, we're not concerned about a lot of the behaviours. However, because they do have an impact and because their development is different, we're also aware that they will need different accommodations to support them while they are developing. And that kind of leads me neatly into, first of all, before we progress any further, why do we need a diagnosis? Why would a parent want a diagnosis? And I'm going to pass it back to you to see what your thoughts are on this.
Good stitch up there, because now I've got to think of something insightful to say. From my perspective, being a person that went through without the understanding in the early years of schooling, I ended up getting expelled at the age of 5 and being labelled a troublemaker and a troubled child, and he's aggressive and all the other stereotypical things that you'd be given as a naughty child. If I had a diagnosis early days, I probably wouldn't have been so misunderstood and would have had access to support and understanding. I would say that's one of the main things. And that's a good thing about being a person who's experienced it firsthand himself. I know what it's like to be the child, and it's very isolating. You spend your whole life not understood. You struggle to find a sense of who you are, knowing that you're different from your peer group, but not really knowing why. And you can be in a room full of people and still feel very alone just because you are different.
And you know you're different. You don't know how, especially in our childhood, but you just feel it.
You do. And so that's from a child's perspective. From a parental perspective, I would say you want the best for your child, the best that they can possibly be based on the cards that they've been dealt. We're not all after the same thing. We're not one of those stereotypical parents who are like trying to brag and keep up with the Joneses and use the child's achievement as some kind of beating stick and something to post on social media. None of that crap. It is all about the child's potential and being able to fulfill that potential if they have something to fulfill in the first place. A lot of the time, we know there are kids that are capable of so much more, but they are being overlooked by the system because they simply do not fit in. And if they don't fit in to a certain mold, they cannot access the learning. And if they cannot access the learning, they are literally thrown on the scrap heap.
Yeah, and they develop very low self-esteem. And as a teacher, I've seen this happen over and over again. And as a parent, I've now had the pain of seeing it happen to my own eldest child.
Yes. Through no fault of his own, the system cannot accommodate him. Therefore, there's something wrong with him. It couldn't possibly be the non-inclusive system. I mean, I could rant about how a lot of the government policies are superficial bullshit and are basically a box-ticking exercise to say, hey, look at us, we're doing all we can, and we've written a few lines of paragraphs that mean that it means it's the law and all this kind of stuff. But we know most of the time it comes down to funding,
yeah,
and access to resources. And that kind of leads into, it's not, I don't want to sound like it's a conspiracy theory, but it seems coincidental that our nearly 7-year-old hasn't had anything up to this stage when you have faith in the system to come through for you.
We did everything the right way with him. And he, and as you've just said, he's nearly seven and so glaringly, obviously autistic.
Yes.
On a very different level to our youngest, he's very obviously autistic. So,
yeah.
You know, at face value, people might see him for 5 minutes and think, oh my gosh, wow, he said hello and he said his name, that kind of thing. But it doesn't take long in his presence to realise that he is different and very sensory led. You know, so he'll, I won't even go into the behaviours, but just believe me, he really is. And then people start to see it. For a child to be this impacted by his differences to the point that he can't attend school and he can't maintain relationships with other children and so many other factors, just trying to leave the house, just trying to go out, you know, to get fresh air. There are so many things he struggles with. And again, we're not sat here really kind of grieving over this necessarily. No. It's more the fact that we see he needs just a bit of help in some of these areas. And the thing from day one that we have had in our sights is sensory OT referrals, essentially. And I just feel like we've had that carrot dangling constantly for years. And we've shared before how we were let down by this system. A system where we actually saw a really good paediatrician and immediately referred to SALT. And then this paediatrician sadly fell ill and went on to long-term sickness. And it's since then, really, everything's gone downhill.
Yeah, it seems a single point of failure is enough to create a backlog of people that are just being left behind for no fault of their own.
A new paediatrician who didn't have the same knowledge that the original one did and didn't actually do their job properly, didn't make the referrals that were supposed to be made. So by the age of three and a half, we were told he was being referred to the consultant, you know, for assessment. And we were told it's a very long waiting list, so we didn't query it when no appointments came through. And then 2 years later, or 1.5 technically, we were told, oh no, this referral was never made. So we challenged it and said, well, to be fair, this is your error. We believe you should fast track him now to be assessed because this child has been flagged up from the age of two, so prominently affected with the sensory world at the age of three. So different to his peers, and constantly all we've been told is watch and wait. No, let's put him into school and see how he copes. If he's in distress, then we can help him because then we can collect evidence for the diagnosis. And actually all we've experienced is kind of, you call it kicking the can down the road. And that is all we have experienced, is people passing the buck or saying, no, let's just wait longer. And it's, you know, it came to a point where he ended up with very terrible school-based trauma. He ended up in a school that would tried so hard to support him and even with an EHCP couldn't. And this is the importance of diagnosis right here. We were told so many times, look, stop being so desperate for the diagnosis because it's not really going to bring you anything because you can apply for EHCPs without one. Stop being so eager for the diagnosis because, you know, he can still have support. Well, actually, no. It appears that the current system depends on a diagnosis to enable referrals to sensory OTs, which is something he's needed from the age of two or three. And they also need a diagnosis if a lot of specialist provision, specialist schools, are to consider your child to attend them. So we feel very let down that we have a child at home who, at the moment, this is where he needs to be. He's recovering from the trauma he experienced at mainstream school, against everything inside me saying don't send him. I did, because that's what we were advised to do, to get evidence. It's all about collecting evidence of them in distress. My point is, if we can kind of intervene early enough, because he was so obviously autistic from an early age, we could have prevented him going through that trauma. I don't understand why they're letting children go through trauma.
Just to tick a box.
It is to tick a box. And we were told, oh, it's to be sure. But it's nonsense because it's obvious.
It's complete bollocks.
You know, we've had videos. We've had years of evidence. And, you know, they just haven't taken the time, to be honest with you, to really kind of get to know us, our child, the situation, anything. And to get to a point where he's almost 7 years old and we have found out now that, yes, it was the sensory OT that he has needed all along and that we are denied access to this because of him not having diagnosis, I feel frustrated. I wish in some way we'd have kind of been a bit more aware of what he was missing out on, really.
They never tell you anything. That you're alone in a sea of misinformation in many ways.
And again, the dangling carrot thing is so apt because they keep saying, look, you know, it is a waiting list, but it won't be long now. We were told he was likely to be diagnosed by the age of 5. And here we are, nearly 7.
He's a really uncomplex case in terms of it's obvious.
He ticks all the boxes. And a lot of the stereotypical boxes as well. Yeah. So there is absolutely no justification.
There's no reason.
At all.
There was no reason to have kept this for so long and deny him access to the stuff he needs. And I feel like his, you know, I don't want to use the whole world, you know, human rights quotation mark stuff, but I feel like his human rights were violated because he hasn't had access to the stuff he deserves access to, that he, by rights, should have access to as an autistic person. And you can go, he's not diagnosed. Well, this is the whole point.
But I think
he should
why.
Be diagnosed by now. There's no reason to have delayed it this long. It's bollocks.
And this is what we feel like. We feel that actually it is consciously being delayed. And I think this will now neatly lead into our youngest child who isn't quite so straightforward. Like, we know, we live with him, we know he's autistic, we see all those quirks, we've been recording them for years.
Yeah.
And we do appreciate that when he goes to an appointment for 15 minutes and meets somebody in a clinical setting for that short space of time, they're not necessarily going to see all the things we do. So you would think that the professionals would perhaps listen to us, but actually they don't tend to do that for some reason. You tend to get this impression that instead they judge you. And they feel that you're just after this label and you'll do anything to get it. That justifies logic. I'm not saying there won't be individuals out there that, you know, want an answer for things and might sometimes go for the wrong one. But let's face it, people, why would you want to have your child diagnosed with something that doesn't fit them? Just like us as adults, people say to the self-diagnosed autistics, you know, you shouldn't be allowed to, I suppose self-identified is probably more accurate.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would you apply this when people think what they think about autism? It's not, I'm proud of it, but actually when you tell people you still don't get treated in the best way, they don't understand you and they still see it as this huge deficit and that you're inferior. So I just don't see the logic in why you'd be faking it. And it isn't like it automatically gives you access to all of this support or money or something. I don't understand what they think. Why would you be lying? It's just literally that you need that label to get support. And there's a lot of work in our local authority happening at the moment to try and acknowledge and change the system to more of a needs-based model so that you don't need a diagnosis to go to a sensory OT. Instead, they will assess a child and say, right, they would benefit from this. Excuse me. They would benefit from this, so let's get them access to this. And then all of a sudden the diagnosis doesn't become as crucial.
It's accommodating the individual's needs. The fact that we have to use labels is only to get access to the help. If we lived in a more accommodating environment, you know, a more accommodating society, where you can just go, oh, this working condition isn't right for me, it's too much noise and the lighting is terrible, it feels like my eyes are being gouged out, can we make some accommodations here? And then they'd be like, actually, yeah, that's fine. Or you have to pull out the, you know, autism card and then suddenly force them to. So regardless of labels, maybe this is the thing. Why can't we just accommodate people's needs?
And, you know, transferring that to the classroom, I admit that our eldest is very complex and there would need to be a lot more thought about how children like him can be accommodated in the classroom, admittedly, because even a lot of the specialist schools are not really appropriate for him.
And no.
That's more because of the PDA side of him.
He would defy any institution you put him in.
And it makes it sound like he's really confrontational, but he's actually not. He's lovely. He just cannot focus and he cannot comply, essentially. You know, it's so hard because when you describe it, people just dismiss it. It sounds like a bratty child just, you know, with a strong will deciding not to play ball. But in his case, he's often just so very overloaded, to be honest with you, with the senses, with the sensory world, and gets overwhelmed very quickly. So for him, admittedly, there'd need to be some real thought. But for children like our youngest, who I'm going to focus on from now on, definitely, if you can get in there early with children like him, I just believe that they could thrive. He doesn't have the same sensory issues to the same degree. He has them.
He definitely has
He's
them.
He's autistic. I think everybody does to some level, but they are not taking over his world to the same degree that our eldest is experiencing. So for him, for example, he could access preschool and he could play with a few children and toys and, you know, cope with a few more demands, I suppose, in that way, than our eldest could. We can see that actually with the right support in place, he's got potential. We're not forcing anything on him, though. The first signs that he's not happy, he won't be staying there.
Yeah, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I mean, I've said, you'll find out by the time he hits year one when there's more of a demand and more formal lesson structures. At that point, you'll see whether he will, unfortunately, sink or swim. You'll find out pretty quickly if it's going to be a success or not at that point. Therefore, you have to then go, right, by this point, we would have known the result and we'll make the right call for his welfare if it doesn't work.
Yeah, but we're hopeful, but we could not let him go to school without assessment. We know from our eldest, and it's so sad he's the guinea pig, and I hear that this is often the case with the first child.
Absolutely, poor guy.
Yeah, he's been through an awful lot, and we just could not kind of let this just happen again, really. And again, people will say, we can apply for an HCP without a diagnosis, and that is already, that's something we're already working on. But actually, without the diagnosis, so many people don't take you seriously. And in his case, because he can make a bit of eye contact and he can superficially socialise, as PDAers do, people just aren't seeing his challenges or the challenges that, you know, we face as a family. And we needed to ensure that, you know, he was assessed and that the school are prepared before he goes in, so that mutually they can have a hopefully better experience. So,
absolutely. This is the thing. I believe that any child who has been flagged up, say, at the age of two, so they've been flagged up early enough, and this was by the actual health visitors.
Exactly.
This is the thing that really pisses me off the most.
Using the ASQ, this is when they get to have a look at kind of how you score on your behaviours, and he was off the scale of having a behavioural issue.
So at this point, at 2 years old, which was, what?
2.5 years ago.
2.5 years ago. With no further progress up to this point.
This is what has been frustrating for us. I'm going to be really blunt. We've shared this before. I apologise every single time for repetitions, but I think there's just so many overlaps with the content, it's impossible not to kind of raise things that have already been said.
There'll always be overlaps.
But we kept seeing this paediatrician who'd actually seen our eldest child and is quite responsible for not referring him on and making mistakes and errors and less watch and wait. And we're actually so sick and tired of that now, of being told that. Like, I think it sends us into a bit of a frenzy.
It triggers me a lot. That person should retire. I'm
not the only one, sadly.
I'm afraid that they are the gatekeepers, and unfortunately they are failing these children. They are starving them of the opportunity to access the support that they are entitled to as an autistic person, as a neurodivergent person. And I don't care what anyone says. If the right people are in front of those children, and I'm not on about just ours, hundreds, thousands, whatever, I don't know the exact amount, but I know it's quite a lot. Mm-hmm. If they were given the right resources to actually get the diagnosis over and done, put a line in the sand and move on for the parents, and all the evidence collecting you have to do, all that crap could have been gone.
Yeah, but can I just kind of interject with why this doesn't happen? Because one of the actual reasons this professional gave us, we have to be sure. That's why we prefer to wait till 7 or 8. Okay, so you'd rather wait until they're at a point where they're so traumatised by school and their self-esteem is so damaged that you then have to put more funding, effort and resources into trying to mend this child, who will then become a damaged adult, who is then going to have all these really awful patterns that they've developed, and they're going to have just feel so bad about themselves and worthless and stupid and, you know, all these things because they are struggling in an environment where other people are thriving.
They will be... conditioned to hate themselves.
Exactly. And you think, why wait till then? I think what this person and several others are basing it on is kind of the older data, which is where it used to on average be diagnosed around 7 or 8. But new literature and stuff that I've read is actually suggesting now it's probably more prevalent around 4 or 5. And there's a real focus on trying to diagnose them earlier because...
catch them as early as possible. It should... I don't want to say prevention, not catch cure. gotta catch them all.
Yeah, very Pokemon.
Yeah, we play that a lot in this house. Yeah, moving on from that bit. Yeah, the point being is the earlier you can get this diagnosis, the earlier you...
Recognized.
The earlier you get access to the help, the longer they are literally not accessing this stuff, is the more damaged they will be by the system, which is not cut out to deal with them.
And it's going to cost the system a lot more to try and help damaged individuals.
Yeah, yeah, this is the thing. These damaged children grow up with complexes, with low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, they're substance abusers, perhaps turning to crime.
All of them, obviously, but it does happen.
There's a good autism. Chunk of them that will end up down that route because of no fault of their own, because of being... chewed up and spat out.
Can I tell you something a doctor said? They said the other reason they have to wait till 7 or 8 is because some children grow out of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some children grow out of their autism. And I have recently learned that actually...
That gives me hope. I mean, I'm 38. When am I going to grow out of it?
Don't know.
I'm still waiting.
My word, I think I'm growing into mine more. But it's just crazy. But I did actually hear something quite disturbing that several people have reinforced, that their children, to go to specialist school, had to take tests as older children to prove they were still autistic. So there you go. There's a lot of stuff going on around us that I am perplexed by and don't have first-hand experience of, but I've heard enough stories to know that obviously it's happening. I did try and do a bit of studying and researching, and apparently there is an assessment or some organisation who actually do assess children to just check they're still autistic. And then there was another article being circulated about how autism becomes milder as children get older, and you think, oh my gosh, do they not understand the fact that you grow up and you mask, you learn these social skills and you mimic them? And some people just won't accept masking as a thing, but
that's
another discussion I'm actually going to write down.
It is masking. Very real. I wear a mask every day of my life, especially when I go to work.
It's just insane. And the last thing I'm going to quickly interject with is doctors. Another doctor, going back to your alcohol and drugs issue, said, oh, you know, the problem we have is there would be so many, you know, if we make it that easy for people to have access to things and to understand autism as individuals and that kind of thing, it's a bit more complex.
To understand themselves.
But the problem is, first of all, autistic people aren't capable of being able to recognise these things in themselves.
Bitch, what?
Yeah. And secondly, the problem is, some people might think they're autistic when actually they're just alcohol and drug abusers. Some people might think they're autistic when they're actually just ADHD, to which I replied. Actually, there's a really high percentage of individuals who are dually autistic and ADHD. And I've seen different studies, but literally around about 80% seems to be the common figure I keep seeing for dually diagnosed. I've then recently seen an article that said there's even arguments now being posed. It's the same thing because it's too overlapping.
I kind of feel like it is in a way.
The so-called symptoms of ASD and ADHD are so overlapping. It is really hard to differentiate them. And he's saying, you don't want to diagnose somebody with autism who's actually ADHD. What if they're both? I think what it is, I'm going to put this out there, they prefer to diagnose ADHD because in their mind, it's tick box, ADHD, and we can medicate them.
Oh yeah, it's important to drug you up to your eyeballs.
It just feels like a really quick fix.
send you on your merry way.
Obviously, we've talked before about how medication can be valuable, but it can also be really damaging. And there are studies that suggest if you are dually ASD and ADHD, which doesn't work if it is the same condition, but again, we haven't got any evidence on this. It's merely a theory at this point. But it can apparently be less effective and cause more side effects. So this is not something to be rash with. Like, you should be doing more thorough assessments, not a 15-minute appointment.
15 minutes, and then, oh, we need to be certain, but we can be certain that within 15 minutes,
yes,
we can medicate you and alter your brain chemistry.
Yeah, and then, yeah, absolutely. And then we'll do this 15 minutes every 6 months to a year. And base every decision on that. And yes, we listen to what you say as parents, but then when you speak, I'm going to belittle everything you say and imply that you are at fault.
Yeah.
So, for example, we talked about my child wetting himself. He was dry quite quickly. He learned to potty train quite quickly at 3, we started. And we've had phases where he's been amazingly dry, and then phases where he'll wet himself about 6 times a day.
Yep.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of logic and reason. There's no obvious kind of reason why this keeps happening. But all I can say is sometimes I know he's distracted and sometimes he's got better things to do, and that's true. But there are times where he has actually said to me, "Mummy, I didn't feel it." I understand that because that happened to me as a child. I remember saying the same thing to my mum. I actually wet myself and she said, it was trickling down my legs, not to be graphic. And she said, why didn't you say you needed a wee? And I said, I can't feel it. And then I cried because it was horrible. I just did not feel the sensation until it obviously was coming out. That's happened to both of our children. And now I know that's down to the interoceptive sensory system. And it's the way that it doesn't kind of like, the message doesn't get to the brain. They don't pick up on those signals. When I suggested this to her, first of all, she looked at me blankly because she didn't really know what I was talking about.
the vacant look on her face.
Yeah. But then she said, do you think perhaps it's more to do with the fact that you maybe got angry when he wet himself? So he's made up a story about not feeling it so that you won't be cross. What's wrong with that? What can you tell me is wrong with what she's just said there?
Yeah. So you've actually given like a medically valid point. Served up nicely. She didn't understand that point, so then decided to deflect that into, it must be your parenting. You must be causing some kind of anxiety, and that's why he's pissing himself. You know, it's a bit like when you have kids that bed wet. You know, they're anxious children, and it must be something that the parents did. Look, I'm not going to bullshit you. There's a lot of parents out there who probably do induce anxiety in their children enough to piss themselves.
Yeah, we can't.
But not in this house.
We can't take that away. You know, there are cases I've worked with families like that. So I'm not at all belittling that. But what actually annoyed me was she made this assumption.
Yes.
That I got angry. And actually, I don't. I'm chill with the whole thing.
You're very, very placid.
And that's what actually insulted me. I thought, there you are. You are projecting onto our family what you believe.
An assumption.
Yes. And just not good at all. We've also been asked, literally from the word go, both children, to film evidence because they obviously can't see them in the home setting. And
yeah.
And sometimes they just have blatantly disbelieved anything we've told them.
Which is great when you're trying to say, look, it really is this way. Yeah. And then obviously...
Oh, but they're so...
They mask.
Delightful.
in the 15-minute thing where they know that, oh, it's another adult that I'm not familiar with, not comfortable with.
Don't know who they are.
I'm going to turn on the charm and just start acting a certain way that's socially acceptable, so I know there's going to be no hassle.
And actually, in this latest appointment, he didn't even, it wasn't like, he just sat there, didn't he, and cuddled into you.
Yeah.
He just felt very shy and uncomfortable. And then at the very end, I think he played with a toy and... Oh, he's delightful. Well, like, he is delightful. We're not saying he's not delightful.
No,
but he is autistic. Lovely. He's about to start school, and he hasn't even been referred yet. He's for 2.5 years been seeing paediatricians for 15 minutes who go, let's watch him wait. And then let's wait until he's at preschool. Let's wait until he's at school. It's just constant. And anyway, this was kind of the last straw for us. We'd already agreed if we do not get this referral, we're going private. And
I think that's the only reason why we haven't said a massive amount back, because
at this stage?
Because, you know, a lot of what's come out of that person's mouth was very triggering.
Oh my gosh, there was so much. So many assumptions made.
I wanted to explode.
Didn't know what the DSM-5 was. As in, obviously they know the DSM-5, what it is. But when I was listing criteria from it, they didn't know what that actually meant in reference to our child. So when I was saying, oh, you know, because he has some of these behaviours that, you know, translate into the DSM-5, they couldn't actually confirm that, yes, it did, because they actually had no working knowledge of that criteria.
So that's the first warning sign. No knowledge of DSM-5 yet. They're the people involved in the screening process. Because if they don't believe the kid's autistic, despite them not knowing DSM-5, how the fuck can they refer?
The problem that keeps being exposed to me time and time again from speaking to these people, from speaking to doctors and just the general public and any professional, is the training need. It is massive. And I understand you are never poor. Going to deliver training that is going to cover every single nuance of autism. But do you know what? The stuff I was referring to are like basic, quite stereotypical parts of autism. And they didn't even recognise that. So there you go.
Again, I'm thinking, we've talked about this before, and I even said, we need some kind of pre-screening tool where you can actually crunch it through regardless of these gatekeepers.
Yeah, a lot of people don't support this, but a lot of people actually do
I'm in the camp that says do, because these people are inept dickheads.
Well, I was told by that doctor I mentioned earlier that the problem you have is then people will just self-diagnose just to have an answer. And it might be the wrong answer, and that's very dangerous. But again, I said I think maybe a very small number might recognise it. But my feeling is, if you recognise that in yourself, you're probably onto something.
Yes,
it's not something you would apply to yourself.
No, you wouldn't. You would
might
no
have
way.
A small number, but generally speaking,
why the fuck would you want to do that?
My only issue with people learning for themselves and kind of going off and just getting support or just living their life knowing, and then kind of finding groups and their neurokin, is that then yet again we're not really getting proper statistics in place over who is actually autistic. So you've still got this you've still got numbers that aren't representative.
We know we're a minority group.
We are a minority group,
but we don't know how much of a minority we really are.
And currently on the NHS, you are only allowed to be referred, because they're not allowed, they just don't have the resources. It's not them as individuals. Like, I want to make this clear. Like, I've spoken to a few of the people who work in this field, especially with adults, actually, more so. And I understand that there are so many strains on them, and they do an amazing job, actually. But they don't have the resources to support over a certain number per year. So what happens is only the most impacted individuals go to them. But this also skews the data, because people like me are then not kind of within that data.
But so you're then, still very much...
I'm still very much impacted. Like, yes. I said to you, I went to the doctors the other day, and that was a really difficult experience, like processing everything. It's just, I'm articulate, I'm intelligent, there's a lot of strengths I have, but there are like basic things that I struggle with that people would be so surprised by. And then they put that down to your dim or something, and I'm not dim, but... Yeah, genuinely, there are things in life that I see other people just doing. They don't seem fazed by it. And I'm overly fazed by it. And then I do become anxious in those environments. And then that's probably when you see that I'm autistic. That's when you see I'm different. That's when I stand out.
Yeah, so getting back to the children aspect. If you know it looks like your child is autistic, and they are very, very young, say around 2. Give yourself a certain benchmark to meet to say, right, I want a diagnosis before they start reception in school, because they have a better chance of actually staying in a school if they have access to all the support and the HCPs in place, you know, when they actually start school. With that little piece of paper, that diagnosis, you'll have access to more than you would without that diagnosis, and you'll be taken more seriously. And that's the whole point, is to go, right, if you're going through the traditional route via the NHS, you need to give yourself a cut-off point And the other thing I would recommend, based on our experiences, is there are long waiting lists, but you know yourself that if you're not hearing anything in a timely enough manner, the likelihood is you're either forgotten, lost in the system, or so far down that list that you're not deemed important or not urgent. Well, that's your child. You're fighting for their future, so you're going to have to make a decision then. Do you start being more vocal towards them to try and get your kid bumped up the list? Or do you go private if you can afford it? And we decided to go private because we could afford it. And that's basically what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So we won't go over the process on this one, but I do think it's something we need to discuss perhaps in another.
Yeah.
But yes, we decided in the end, and again, as you mentioned earlier, we had predicted in this latest paediatrician appointment exactly what was going to be said.
Because absolutely. It was almost as if I'd written a script,
we could have written the
put it in front of them, and they just quoted it verbatim.
We were literally, actually, we were quite amused because we had predicted it. We were like, you know, this is nothing we weren't expecting. Oh yeah, let's just watch and wait again, another 6 months, and then probably watch and wait another 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
We can't be sure, you know, he's just settled in at the moment or whatever.
Again, so many things to discuss about the system and the flaws there, but we decided in the end, stuff this. We've gone through 6.5 years of our eldest. He has been referred to complex teams. We've had nothing.
He's been referred to a black hole.
That's what it feels like. He's like, and actually, just to give you an example here, so he was referred to SALT through because he's been referred to this complex team, and we've still received nothing for him. A letter saying, oh, we will make him an appointment at some point, and I think it's like almost 6 months to a year on, and nothing.
Yeah, where's the referral?
Literally, his younger brother, who was referred months after him, has actually received an appointment when he starts school.
Yeah.
A few weeks into school. And what's interesting about that, we wonder if, again, it's because our eldest is now at home. So it feels like he's just, they're just thinking, hey, you know.
Yeah, bumping down really the priority list.
He's at home. What does it matter?
Yeah.
And we actually had that attitude for a while. Like, this is why we ended up paying for our youngest to get diagnosed, because we thought he is starting school and he is going to have needs. My eldest is at home and he's with me and I can make the environment very friendly for him. Our youngest, we knew that we needed to get something in place before he started school to give him the best opportunity for success. So that was kind of what was behind it. And we knew that we were getting nowhere fast with the NHS. And normally I'm just so glowing of our NHS, but this system, and so many, but this particular system is a mess. And I know it's under review, and I know that they're aware, but it doesn't change things for those children now.
It doesn't have to be this shit. This is a choice. This is a professional choice to be this shit.
It feels like
okay?
it.
It really is. Being a person that comes from a background of organizing and creating systems and processes and tools and workflows and everything else, I can categorically state for a fact that this is shit and doesn't have to be. This is avoidable. This can be corrected.
And do you know what's interesting? When you talk to a lot of the professionals, they come up with all these excuses, but they're nonsense.
They
and,
need
as I said,
to fuck
many
off.
Of them, you said they're literally just, it's just a job to them. Some of them
they are stealing
rude,
a wage.
It feels like that. They're just thinking, hey, this is easy. I'm just doing what I've always done.
Just coasting.
Haven't developed my knowledge or understanding of this. I haven't actually grown as a person or tried to, you know, I think some of them will go, well, there isn't any new training. But there's a lot of stuff online you could do yourself. And I'm not being funny, but we do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've paid for a lot of stuff independently to learn and just sit and research. And that should be an interest.
That
of
is supposed
Surely
to be
their
field.
It's just shocking.
That's
it
supposed
really
to be something they're supposed to know about.
And then you go in and for years I nodded and I grinned and I didn't say much in response because I didn't want to tread on toes. And then I got to a point where I thought, no, I have to.
Yeah.
And they didn't like that because they think you're trying to tell them how to do their job.
Damn right we are.
Actually, to be honest with you, it's just not good enough. Anyway, so going back to, we then decided the right thing is to, I mean, we weren't sure if he'd get his diagnosis, but we thought this is our best shot.
Yeah, he's a super masker. And I thought, to be honest, the only option now is to go private and really hope for the best.
The slight annoyance is we have years of footage. My phone is full of footage of both children exhibiting a lot of, like, you know, very autistic behaviours, but also a lot of distressed behaviours. And it's so upsetting that that's kind of what we've had to do for the last few years.
Yeah, because your memories, when it does a little kind of compilation short, like best of video, is a best of meltdowns and general horribleness.
It makes you want to cry. Because
it's depressing.
It's
also very skewed history as well, because it's like, we're not saying that it isn't hard and isn't a struggle at times, but we love our kids and they do bring us many hours of joy.
They do.
But your timeline wouldn't say that because you're evidence collecting on the timeline.
This has been quite hard, but we were told collect.
Yeah.
And then some professionals want to watch it.
Yeah.
Something's going on with the sound here, I think. Or is it my headphones? It might be.
Yeah, you're still coming through.
My apologies. Yeah, some people will watch it, but generally speaking, they don't have the time, and they make no secret of the fact they don't have the time. I'm sorry for the ones that want to and have to say, look, I'm sorry, but this is a short appointment. We'd have time.
But the point of it then?
But you're asked to collect it, and then at the last appointment, I asked to show the professional, and they were very rude.
They were.
Very rude. And then what they do is they talk down to you as though there's something wrong with you that you've recorded it. Like, how could you? And you're like, well, I've been told to do that by you for years. And then they contradict themselves and make out like you're this bad person.
Yeah.
For recording your child in distress, and actually you've been told to do this. It's like gaslighting on a really high level.
That's it. Absolutely. And if you think of all the wasted minutes and hours collated over those very few and far between appointments, the irony is that would have been enough to actually have a diagnosis session, and would have been more productive than this shit.
And these 15-minute sessions are pointless. They need to be longer. And so that was, again, what put us down the private route. We thought, you know, we're not naive. He does mask quite well. He is a PDA-er. We already knew this.
Yep. He's incredibly articulate and he's switched on. He's smart.
Very smart. And people seem to think if you're autistic, you can't be. And that's insane as well.
Yeah, like you need to just have an intellectual handicap. And yes, there are some, but not all. And this is the thing. If you don't fit this stupid mold, then you cannot possibly be. And it's no.
Yeah, we're just all different with different strengths and weaknesses, but a lot of shared qualities.
There's commonality, obviously.
Absolutely. But and it is awful. They just try and put you in a box. And if you don't fit the box that they're familiar with, then you can't possibly be autistic.
These
and it's just, anyway.
Very rigid parameters.
But what happened in the end, we went to this private diagnostician and we had our reservations. We thought, oh, we're going to pay all this money and not get one. But we were also aware that, you know what, even if we don't get one and we've kind of wasted the money, at least we haven't wasted another couple of years.
Yeah, we found out quicker.
Yeah, exactly. And I think within a couple of months from the pre-assessment to the final diagnosis, you know, I just think as well, I'd just rather pay the money if you can to save your time. We've spent years, 6.5 with our eldest, 4.5 with our youngest, or technically 2.5, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, 4.5 with our eldest and 2.5 with our youngest, but that's still a long time. And in that time, it's constant worrying, paperwork, judging, under the microscope, waiting for referrals, stupid appointments. And did I mention the paperwork again? Yes, I did. It's just insane the amount you have to do. And then the stress and the worry and the recording and the I'm repeating myself because that's basically what's happened over the last few years. We just do the same thing day in, day out, trying to evidence and justify everything.
Oh, look, they're melting down. Quickly.
Yeah, quick. We need evidence because
now.
They don't believe us.
Go.
They think we're bad parents.
Oh, no, they can see that you're recording them. Oh, no, now they're even more frenzied. Shit.
Oh, and then the armchair critics of, oh, well, do you think maybe they're angry because you recorded them? And like, oh, my gosh. Like, seriously. We try to disguise it because we don't obviously want to trigger them. But how are we supposed to gather this evidence they've asked for? It's just ridiculous. Anyway, what the benefit of going private was is you had somebody who actually knew what they were talking about. They were very familiar with the DSM-5 criteria.
And they're working for you.
Different assessment tools that they could use. From my research, I was aware that, yes, some of these assessment tools still aren't always the most robust, I suppose.
But that's the tools in itself.
They're not so good with necessarily children like our youngest both children, who are a little bit more socially able and PDA, essentially.
Yeah.
And it can be really, really hard to kind of see through the masking. But as the diagnostician said, when I raised this concern, she said, that's why we don't rely on just one test. That's why we do so many assessments.
Which is reassuring.
Exactly. So you have the interviews with parents, you've got all this paperwork you fill out. And then she also took the time to sit and look at videos, and I did loads of annotations of these videos.
And you went the extra mile. It's really good.
Like, you know, she was just amazing. I sent her so much stuff to read, and I referenced the DSM-5 criteria with examples because I just didn't want to leave any stone unturned, you know? I was like, even if it comes out where she says, no, I'm sorry, I can't diagnose him because he doesn't really fit the box, I needed to know that I'd given everything I possibly could.
Now, you might not have that ability to do it to that level. I probably couldn't. I'm very grateful that you are my wife.
Thank you.
And the level of detail you went to. I mean, you're clearly autistic. But
yeah, I don't think I'm autistic.
But in this case,
I hyper-focus on these things.
But in this very case, this is an example of it really helping out, actually, because you're very details orientated.
And also the PDA element. Like, I gave so much evidence, and obviously,
insider information.
For those of you that aren't aware, it's not a diagnostic tool, but the EDAQ is a indicator of whether you might have extreme demand avoidance. And he actually scored 57. So, and I think 50 was the cutoff for his age group. Our eldest has actually scored 61.
Well in.
So, you know, they definitely do display a lot of those traits.
And they're brilliant.
I also score quite highly, but that's not for here. So, you know, there's that kind of thing. Maybe that's the problem. We're PDA is too. So we're like not taking any of this nonsense.
Yeah, so screw you.
Tell us what to do.
Yeah.
Tell us it's our parenting. How dare you?
Yeah.
But no, we... long story short, she really reassured us, and
what
we
a
were
difference.
Very happy. Yeah, and the time, and I know people will go, well, that's because you're paying for it.
It's not, but the point. We are paying. Yeah. We're paying for the other one as taxpayers.
Yeah, and then she did one assessment, and and she said, actually, do you know what? I need to come back and do another one because his verbal fluency was at a higher level than I'd expected. So again, how thorough. She could have just left it there, but she didn't. She said, I'm going to come back and
use the higher the older scoring criteria, the older age scoring criteria.
Let's do a slightly different assessment because I want to really make sure I've done this properly. And, you know, I just can't fault the process at all. And they did use ADOS too, which again, like I said, is not known as the best tool for people who are a little bit more atypical in their presentation. However, there is a module in there, and any self-respecting diagnostician should be aware of which one this is. Do I say it? Can I say it?
I don't care.
Well, it's on the PDA Society in one of their downloads. And it's actually...
This information is freely available on the internet.
It is freely available.
Therefore, crack on, say it now.
Actually, just share it on the page. But yeah, it's module 3 of the ADOS 2. If you have a child who's verbally fluent, and if you do have a PDA, that is probably the best one that is going to expose that side of them.
So that's a good tip. Make sure they do that module.
I'm not saying if your child doesn't get kind of diagnosed as autistic that...
They're not. That's another thing we must put in there.
Yeah, it actually says about the DISCO, which is something I read about or learned about, I think, in lockdown through the National Autistic Society. And that's actually used more so with women and girls. And it's being branched out to also try and include things like demand avoidance, pathological demand avoidance, because they are a little bit more thorough and more contextual. They're not just basing it on a test, if that makes sense. It's more about really kind of getting to know the individual and the context. So there are things out there, and it's being developed, and there's still a lot of argument. There's still a lot of like conflict, should I say, in this world of whether PDA really exists. But, you know,
it does. It's real.
It does. It's a profile of autism. Currently, that's how it's understood. And
it's definitely part of it. The thing that really pisses me off is I think it's got a really shit PR.
It has.
The actual name just conjures up a certain thing.
And I think I wrote on my blog the other day, it's a high anxiety kind of condition. And someone said, actually, I don't experience it that way. And I thought, actually, yeah, do you know, I've just done the exact same thing and I've generalized it.
Yeah.
And actually, it's so much more nuanced. Like, for example, I definitely am PDA. I'm a PDAer. I'm not a pathological demand avoidance. I'm a, I'm a PDAer. But I present in such a different way to my children. Mine's more internal.
Yeah.
Which I can talk about another time.
Definitely.
But yeah, it's... if you do have a child who presents differently, I still say go for it. Just make sure that you provide as much evidence as possible to the diagnostician. And if you need to, try and budget paying them a little bit extra for their time, like find out how much they charge an hour and give them videos. Do everything you can. You know, this is your opportunity.
Because again, they, you know, if they're like our kids, you know, and they mask a certain way, it might be hard to diagnose them in that one session.
It's not always easy to do. And I think you have the problem. A lot of people say, yeah, but the parents could say anything. But again, let's question this. Why would you?
And also, if you can back up with, again, evidence. The little thing called evidence,
exactly.
then why the hell does any of the other people in your life, the armchair critics, the uneducated, ignorant fuckers, ignore them, by the way. That's one of the things, another tip is to just tune them out because they don't know what they're talking about.
I'm not there yet.
My allegiance is with the truth, and the truth doesn't give a flying fuck what your opinion thinks.
No, but sadly, and I will tell you this, as mum, as the person doing all this paperwork...
Yeah, you get it more than anyone, of course.
As the person living it every single day, it is so hard on you mentally and emotionally, as well as physically, and it's hard not to let that penetrate because you actually do become very weak and vulnerable, and, you know, I've always been a very strong and resilient person, and I've broken down over the last couple of years into a very different human being on the back of all this stress. And a lot of that is external. It's actually the things people say. It is the professionals. It's the system. It's broken me down. It's another reason we went private. You know, I don't want more years of this. I can't actually cope with any more years of this. And then people will go, oh, must be the parents are like mentally unwell, and you're like, well, you've kind of created this monster because I was actually fine until you put me through this hell. And I will just say about the diagnosis that we went for privately, the only painful part for me was the anxiety and the anticipation of over that couple of months, you know, waiting for reports and waiting for the result. And when the final formal assessment was actually written, I had to wait 48 hours after payment.
48 painful hours.
And I'm autistic. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
I was pretty confident what the outcome was going to be because I witnessed the whole thing. And, you know, I have an idea about it.
Absolutely.
You just don't 100% know, do you? And, I think you've probably gathered by this point that...
Drum roll.
He did receive his diagnosis, and it was noted that he also met the PGA profile of autism.
Absolutely.
So we're really happy. He's going into school with a diagnosis. We are trying to get supports into place as we speak. So like, we're really, really happy. And so this has, as usual, turned into a bit more of a waffly one than we intended.
To be honest, I think it's fine. But that's the thing. The side effects of having a diagnosis done privately are... not having to collect evidence anymore.
Oh my gosh, that was what I was going to say, is the relief.
Oh, it's brilliant, seriously.
The relief.
Best feeling ever.
You said to me, like, we were both very excited when we received it and saw it in print. Wow.
Seriously.
You know, and some people don't understand that. Like, oh, it's just a piece of paper. And you're like, this piece of paper validates everything.
It validates the struggle and it validates the fact that you were correct all along.
But it's things like, so as an example, we were putting him to bed. And I think it took a while for it to sink in with me.
Yeah.
I felt flat, to be honest, to start with. I was a bit like...
anticlimactic because you're just like...
well, I already knew anyway.
me what I don't know.
I was so relieved to have it kind of validated, but...
it's a rubber stamp.
I think it's more the emotional energy. And then also, you go through all these emotions, like you're quite angry as well, because you think, like, how has this not been done already? Like,
that's the thing.
He came out as so obviously autistic from all the paperwork, all the assessments. Yeah. And it is actually, and that then made me angry.
You get angry at the system then because you think this shit could have been avoided.
Yeah, you're telling us, let's wait till he's in school.
No.
Let's wait until school are watching him. Let's make him distressed and then collect evidence of him in more distress, even though we've already been doing that for the last 2.5 years. It's just not right. It's not okay. And it's unnecessary. And he didn't, luckily he's not going to have to go through that at school because we've, you know, started putting stuff into place, but that probably would have been a story.
He would have been another statistic, and that really, 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 really boils my piss.
And for what? Because this person saw him for 15 minutes and felt he didn't need to be referred for an assessment. Who on earth do they think they are?
I'm angry on behalf of my own children and your children.
Yeah.
And the future children.
Yeah, and this is another thing that's like very interesting. So we have now decided to get our eldest assessed. We didn't see the point at one point because we thought we might as well wait. He's been waiting this long, 4.5 years, and now he's at home. is there a big rush? But actually, again, like you said, it's the collecting evidence aspect of it.
Yeah. And we're put to done. Bed.
That is so hard. And that's what people of, that's what parents of typical children, I think, don't.
They
know,
take for granted the fact that they don't have to do any of that shit. It's really like today, hard. Our youngest was having a really bad meltdown. And I actually had a smile on my face. And yeah. I just went, isn't it great that we don't have to film this?
We don't have to film it. Not that, I mean, some people say, yeah, but surely you don't because you've got enough evidence. But what happens is sometimes you'll see a professional and they say, well, that was that long ago. So you've got to kind of keep updating it.
Yeah, they want recent stuff. They don't want historical crazy. Stuff because they might have like grown out of their autism.
Yeah. I'm kind of, we are going to go forward with presenting this back to these people. We're just at the moment constructing everything we want to get out there. And I'm very intrigued. They're probably going to dismiss it as in, or they don't care. That's one less person for them to have to worry about. We did have a concern that the local authority might not accept it, but I have actually... Oh,
they will be.
Yeah, but I have been told by several other people who actually received their diagnosis through her, because she meets the NICE guidelines. She's so thorough and obviously understands DSM-5 criteria, and the report is amazing, to be fair. There's nothing that can be disputed on it, that actually there should be no issue, but we haven't sent it as of yet because we're constructing kind of our little our thoughts and reflections and advice.
Oh, yeah.
And our annoyance, really, because I feel annoyed that literally weeks ago, this individual, now little did she know, we were actually already embarking on this process, but just weeks ago, she told us, yeah. Hey, no need right now, let's watch and wait. And then within about 4 weeks of that appointment, he has a diagnosis. He's been assessed very thoroughly and he's been diagnosed. How can they justify that? How can they justify that within about 4 weeks of seeing a paediatrician with the NHS, who seems to feel there's no need to flag him up right now, that we've actually just received a diagnosis and they've seen... Actually, he does need support at school, and they've even written that in the report.
That's the whole point of why you do this. You pursue it because you want to support them, because you want to give them the best shot in life.
But how can they justify it? And then that's what's made us angry about our eldest, because he really, really is impacted. Again, he's at home. How can he be left? I mean, you know I cry a lot, and this stuff has weighed heavy. It's awful. It's just it's unjust.
Here's the thing. We want to level the playing field. We want to give our children the opportunity to perform the best of their abilities. Now, whatever that is, we don't know yet. But we're not going to throw them on the scrap heap.
No, because we keep getting the kind of like... We underestimate like they're not them ever... and their life is over.
Yeah, it's crap. They're too young at this point.
Not our youngest, but we get a lot of that about our eldest too. People really look down upon
him. We don't know at this stage. We don't know what he's capable of. I'm not going to...
Really intelligent boy, but yes, he's very distracted and he is very overwhelmed with sensory stuff. So, I wonder if a sensory OT might be helpful.
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I have to look into private. I didn't even think to look for private sensory OT until the other day, so maybe that's the next step.
That's all you get him diagnosed and then it's we'll pursue the next stage. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, and they don't have a clue. Because you've got your kids' interests at heart. You're not trying to be a pushy parent.
No.
But you need to be pushy with them if you're sticking with that, not going private. You really have to hold them accountable.
We have talked before
pursue
about
them.
Uploading everything that we've done. And I think I just don't have time at the moment. But at some point, we will really do something. Intend to, you know, even if it's not creating something and I just take the children's names out and just stick it all on the blog and you can download it and edit it. You know, just whatever helps you.
I almost feel like we need to have some kind of wizard so you can kind of construct it based on certain criteria. So it is a personalised profile.
Yeah, definitely. We'll talk about that outside of this though.
Yeah.
I want to end on a real positive because we have got his diagnosis. And
that's brilliant.
You mentioned the word relief earlier and the relief this has brought. And I'll give you the example where it really hit me this week that we've got his diagnosis, oh my word, and how life-changing it is. So... why get a diagnosis for all the things we've already discussed? But this is the biggest one for me at the moment. We were putting him to bed and he was getting all his little like blankets and his teddies and putting them all in place. He is surrounded by stuff. Like he has to be all cocooned in.
So sweet he is.
He is so adorable. But, you know, normally I'd have to be there with my camera taking pictures or filming to show some of his OCD qualities, yeah. to show some of his repetitive behaviours. You're just constantly switched on to, this is a great piece of evidence. This
Instead
is a great
of enjoying
piece of
the moment with him.
You never get to enjoy them. And the other night we were like just talking to each other about how he'd kind of not regressed, but he at the moment he's back into Night Garden.
Yeah, and which he's is strange. Like,
taking all his old baby blankets out of the cupboard and cuddling them.
It's bloody cute. And he wanted to be in a onesie.
Yeah, he wanted to be in a onesie. And then he's got all his teddies around him. And it was just adorable. And we were just like, oh, he's so lovely, isn't he? I love his little quirks. And isn't he so cute? And isn't he lovely? And you know, I'm repeating myself, but he just is. He's wonderful. And I think it was, we just looked at each other and said, isn't it lovely that we can just sit here and enjoy him for who he is and not have to think about filming and evidencing, because that part's over until we have to prove he's still autistic later down.
I will. I read them a strongly worded letter.
Can I tell you another thing that's a relief for me this week? I constantly teach them things like toolkits and scripts and like about the world. I do an awful lot of play therapy. I didn't know that that's what I was doing until the diagnostician actually picked up on it. She was like, you're brilliant, you do a lot of play therapy. Like, she's just so lovely. And she just made me feel very confident about my parenting. And I've always been like, I've known that I'm a really nurturing mum and everything, but you know, when you are for a couple of years or a few years now being attacked all the time, you know, I defy anyone to not start feeling like there's something wrong with them. And gosh, maybe I have done something wrong. And I know really at heart that I haven't. I couldn't do any more for my children. But I've even had professionals tell me off for teaching them coping strategies. Well, you're making it very hard to diagnose them because you've taught them coping strategies.
That's the whole point.
But I want them to be able to actually exist.
And thrive.
It's just ridiculous. So they make you feel like you're wrong. Teaching them anything to cope in life.
That's the worst thing about it.
It's so awful.
You're doing yourself a disservice for actually teaching them coping mechanisms.
Because then they present as, they're fine in this situation. And actually, it's the stuff I've put in. You know, I wouldn't change that. But of late, especially knowing the assessment was coming up, I kind of stopped correcting him. And I was trying not to kind of be as mumsy, I suppose. I was like, I want his natural stuff to come out, so it's not everything that I'm drumming into him every day. And you were doing something with our eldest, Jenna, and I said, don't do anything until this assessment's over. Don't correct him. Don't tell him, you know, how to act in this situation, because I want him to be a bit more raw and natural. Yeah. And it might sound awful, but, you know, otherwise people don't see it because they're just performing the stuff and regurgitating the stuff that you teach
them. It's a scripted action rather than a natural action.
Yeah, but the relief for me is this. I can now do that with him. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he now appears as fine on, you know, superficially to people, because he's got his diagnosis.
Fine. He's great.
He's amazing. But you know what I mean? Like, he can now, for example, one of the things that did come up, actually, I can't say it because then it tells people what they're looking for in the assessment. But I'll just tell you this generically. There was something in the assessment that he didn't do. And I picked it up from the first assessment. And then I spent a week teaching him this skill because I hadn't noticed he couldn't do it. And then I was like, oh, I can teach you how to, you know, improve this area. And I spent literally a week doing it. And then by the time she did the next assessment, he did it, which again wasn't good because I was like, oh no, now he looks like he's absolutely fine. But now the diagnosis is given and now that's over, I can continue to kind of teach him these life skills without worrying that it's going to somehow affect a score on an assessment, which is how I was living before. It was always about, oh my gosh, if I teach him too much, then when they come around to assessing him, they're going to say, oh, he's fine. You know, he doesn't need a diagnosis. That's the other thing I've heard doctors saying, by the way.
They need to shut up if you ever hear that.
If they can learn to function at school, if they can learn to function in society, why do they need the diagnosis? And you're like, oh my word, speak to any adult autistic and you'll know why.
It ain't that bloody simple.
It's not just about that. But anyway, that's for another discussion.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share with you the positive, and it's
the relief, on a high note,
the fact we can enjoy just him. And hopefully when the eldest is assessed and hopefully diagnosed, which I'm sure he will be, I think we can actually now put a line in the sand to start enjoying our children, which is something that I feel has been taken away from us. Their development has been pathologized and we can just no longer have to worry.
And you no longer have to focus on the deficiencies. you know, because that's what you've been trained to look at it
absolutely.
As. Which is just crap. There's so much more to it being a disability.
It's like when he did the demand avoidant thing the other day, and this is my final example.
Yeah.
I know we've gone on, but
it's really good though.
But he took 25 minutes to get dressed, and I filmed this along with so many other things. And when I was showing the demand avoidance, I said the misconception for demand avoidance is it's always this extreme. Like, obviously, that's a part of it. But some of it is so creative and so intelligent, and it actually impresses me.
It's really
creative. To be honest with you. And one of the examples, it doesn't sound good unless you see it, to be honest. Maybe I'll blur his face out and put the video on because it is really good. But he said, oh, mummy, I can't get dressed because, oh, I can't open the door. I can't reach the clothes. Oh, mummy, the wardrobe door's trying to trap me now, so I can't. And then there was one point where he closed the door with his foot, and I said, oh, can you please not close it with your foot? Meaning hands, but I didn't say, can you close it with your hands? So he saw the loophole and he closed it with his head. So it's, you know, he'll do it, but he'll do it like on his terms. And there's so much more, but it was just amazing. And, you know, again, I don't see all of his demand avoidance as a negative thing either. I think it's so creative. And I just think, wow, look at that brain you've got in there is special. And I think it's really worth it.
It needs nurturing.
Yeah, it needs nurturing. And he is so capable of amazing things.
So much potential. And that's what you want. You want to lock onto that.
And he's so interested in the world. And he asks so many interesting questions. And I love it. So now we can focus on that part of life, and I can't wait for my eldest to be diagnosed so that we can do that with him. And for me, the money is worth it.
Absolutely.
For that reason.
Save up, get a loan, I don't know, rob a bank, whatever you need to do, get the diagnosis.
Since actually doing this, we have had family members actually contribute to this.
Yeah, so to...
But initially it was us, and... But they obviously saw the value in it so much they wanted to help, and that means an awful lot.
So thank you, even though you're probably not ever going to be listening
to this.
Thank you very much.
It really means a lot. And we know not everybody has that support network. But, you know, if you can, I just, for the feeling
Please
that we're
do.
Having now, I think it's worth it.
Yep. Excellent.